The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast
foretold the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. We are so glad to be back after, what, 3 weeks away?
3 weeks away. Today is December 11th, 2011, 12-11-11, and, or if in European form, it'd be 11-12-11.
Yeah, so yeah. There you go.
And that way...
We're heading up on 2012. We're almost there.
That's right.
You know, a year from now... We'll be doing a show, and that will be an interesting one indeed, yeah. Will it not? A
couple of interesting weeks leading up to Christmas of 2012 for sure. But we welcome you, and we thank you for your patience. You may have noticed some posts recently at the PID Radio Cafe on Facebook that kind of explained why we had not been back online for quite some time. Of course, we were away over the Thanksgiving holiday, and... Just the last couple of weeks, we've just been very busy in real life.
We have been.
We've gone analog.
We've been performing.
And you may not have seen it, but I posted a picture to the PID Radio Cafe of the ensemble of which we were a part.
The ensemble.
You may not have even seen the picture.
No, actually, I didn't. I haven't been online in days.
Well, anyway.
Is there an internet? Interwebs?
They've got this new thing now called the internet. And we took part in the... the Coles County Barbershop Chorus's 36th annual Christmas benefit concerts. That's the barbershop group that I belong to. My quartet was a part of it, and the chorus, of course, performed. But then, to offer the people who attended something different, our director Tom Woodall invited including himself, but
the
four
wives.
Other husbands and their wives and his wife then to participate in an a cappella rendition, a very jazzy arrangement of Let It Snow. And it was a lot of fun to do.
And then it snowed at the very end. A peculiar sort of snow, but yeah. It did indeed snow.
Rather pulpy, wood pulpy.
Papery.
It was confetti. So, but a lot of fun. And if you go to the PID Radio Cafe, you'll see a picture of the group with us on the right-hand side there. So, but that's what we've been doing between that and our Christmas cantata at church today. Starting last Saturday night, between the two of us, we've sung like 1, 2, 3, 4, then we had caroling Tuesday, rehearsals Monday and Wednesday, and then today sing about eight times in the last six, 7, 8 days.
Does it count if you wake up with a song in your head? Because I have awakened every morning for the past probably 3 or 4 weeks with a song in my head.
Huh. Well, that might count.
Noel,
that might count.
Noel, Noel, Noel.
Yes, one of the songs in the cantata.
Noel, Noel.
And through that, at least, thankfully, I've gotten most of the way past that chest cold. And that's been a big struggle the last few weeks, too. I could barely speak, and then here we were out, singing in public.
Oh, man, you should have been there this morning at church. Derek and I, we were in the cantata this morning at church, and, we love that church.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, our prayer is that every one of you could find, a wonderful fellowship of believers, because there's something to really having an analog group. We love our virtual family,
that's right. Yes.
All of you. We love you so much. But there's you can only do so much in the virtual realm. I mean, virtual hugs are nice, but real hugs, give you something else again. But we sang the cantata this morning, and about 8 o'clock this morning, Tom called and asked me if I could switch from alto to soprano.
Mm-hmm.
So and there were parts of it where I still
surprise.
Had to sing alto because there were I noticed suddenly there were no altos singing it. But various things. Some of the entry, points were really kind of hard to figure out where they came in. But we were also told the altos had been told to help out the tenors in several sections.
Right.
So
and we needed all
alto,
the help we could get.
I sang alto, tenor, and soprano.
Yeah.
This morning.
Bass is the only part you didn't.
I was almost a quartet in and of myself. which is very similar to the way the world is going right now. There are various peoples in the world trying to be everything to all, you know, all things to all people.
Indeed.
And I got to tell you, I have so been remiss in keeping up with the news. Like I said, interwebs news. Mm-hmm. Don't know.
Well,
look, if it's not on CBS, is it news?
And, you know, to an extent, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because we have found that when you spend so much time sort of hot dipped in this news on a daily basis, mm-hmm. it really does kind of warp our actual walk and interaction with, you know, with our neighbors and our friends here
balance
in the local
in
community.
All things.
So we're trying to strike the balance. And lately we've kind of swung back toward our analog existence. And,
Before we jump into the news, which I have sort of, you know, put that onus upon you today, your responsibility today is to bring the news.
Your job, Mr. Gilbert, should you choose to accept it.
Did you notice that Voyager 1 has reached the edge of our solar system?
Yes, I did.
Voyager.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes.
You and I have been Star Trek, you know, crazy the mm-hmm. last month or so. We've been Netflixing Star Trek, the original series. And finally, the other night, I watched the brand new movie, the new version, the reboot.
The reboot, yeah.
The reboot. If you haven't seen the movie yet, I won't tell you more, but prepare to be, if you're a Star Trekker mm-hmm. and you know the original series very, very well, be prepared to be very angry for the mm-hmm. first half of the film. I was finding more plot holes in that first half, and then once I realized, oh, okay.
This is the new timeline. Yeah, that makes all the difference.
We'll say no more than that, but it was a good movie once I got over that.
Well cast, Simon Pegg as Scotty, Carl Urban as McCoy, Dr. McCoy.
You know, at the end, you and I went, Carl Urban?
Carl Urban,
where was he?
And because Carl Urban played Aelmer.
Yes,
Lord of the Rings. The leader of the Riders of Rohan, if you know.
Guy with the long blonde hair.
Yeah, and he was McCoy in just doing a dead-on DeForest Kelly.
In fact,
you green-blooded hobgoblin.
His rendition of the original characters, you know, that was my favorite one. I said, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to watch it again just to watch McCoy.
Yeah, yeah. Although Simon Pegg did a great job as Scotty.
He was really good. And of course, it was good to see Leonard Nimoy again.
Yeah. Yeah, so well done. I've been going back and watching. Well, actually, we started going back and watching Deep Space Nine on Netflix.
There's so much stuff in those Star Trek. You know, you and I, just in case you've just tuned in and you're thinking, why are they doing Star Trek, memorabilia? It really is because, honestly, there's a lot in there. Gene mm-hmm. Roddenberry was very connected to the Nine.
Right, and if that reference doesn't ring a bell for you, go to PIDRadio.com. In the search box, search for the name Peter Lavenda, L-E-V-E-N-D-A. We've interviewed Peter Lavenda a couple of times, both on PID Radio and View from the Bunker, and his books, Sinister Forces. You know, one of the books is subtitled. Yes, subtitled.
The very first one is called The Nine.
The Nine, right. And that was a group of nine entities that were out in space, supposedly, according to contactees who were engaging essentially in seances, more or less, to mm-hmm. Communicate with these entities under the direction of Andrea Puharich, who was a contractor to the Central Intelligence Agency back in the 1950s and 1960s. A group would get together, and these were not, you know, wingnuts. These were well-respected,
well-connected, well-heeled
society icons mm-hmm. on East Coast, very old money, mm-hmm. connected to the Astors and the Forbes.
And Bell Helicopter.
Right. So these are, and the bizarre thing that, and this is what really led Peter Lavenda into his whole, you know, line of research, is that he discovered that as he started pulling at the thread of these people, he found that they were connected like about 2 degrees from Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just a whole bunch of other
and
bizarre connections.
And it all becomes the 6 degrees of Charles Manson, eventually.
Right. And the reason we, you know, led here from Star Trek is that later on Gene Roddenberry became part of this group that had these seances to connect to the Nine. And eventually it came out that the Nine revealed themselves to this group as the Nine principal gods of the Egyptian pantheon.
The Aeneid.
Yes. So it's not a coincidence,
we think. Christopher Knowles, he contends that the main characters in the original Star Trek can be equated one-on-one to the Aeneid. Now, I'm not really sure how he does that, but he clearly has been down that rabbit hole.
Gnostic themes in Star Trek, and both in the original series. It's probably not a coincidence that the last series with which Roddenberry was sort of connected was Deep Space Nine.
He had actually one called The Nine.
So you're right, right. And a film based on The Nine that never came to fruition. But it's not not a coincidence that there were some very serious theological or religious themes that ran through Deep Space Nine, which is why I wanted to go back and go through it. I mean, from the very first episode, Commander Sisko of the space station.
The Emissary.
Yes, it's called the Emissary by the planet Bajor, which is, around which the space station
orbits. So, V'ger, if you've not seen the Star Trek movie, the original Star Trek movie, where they run across this entity, which is actually based on a show from the original series, but it's Voyager, that has shown up again, and it wants to go back to the home planet and erase all of the biological infestations.
That's correct. Yeah, in the show in the original series, it was Nomad that came back, and they beamed it on board, and they it mistook Captain Kirk as his creator instead of Roy Kirk, which was the name of the creator. And
so Voyager 1 is at the end of the solar system. Solar system.
So, so just an interesting thing. So we'll have to watch, a couple hundred years, watch for it to come back and try to wipe us out and pray that Christ returns before that. Just an interesting observation. I was reading something the other day, and I wish I could give attribution now, and I can't remember where I read this. But, I do remember now. It was in the most recent newsletter, Media Spotlight, which is produced by Al Dager. And I highly encourage you to subscribe to it. And he does a wonderful model in which you can subscribe for free and then donate as you feel led. But he does a lot of eschatological and political analysis in his hard copy newsletter that he sends out. But he's also got quite a few articles online at mediaspotlight.org. But in the most recent issue that he sent out, he made the observation, which had never occurred to me before, which is kind of weird considering that I've been a fan of science fiction my entire life, that since we are told in Scripture, in prophecy, that all nations and tribes and peoples will see Jesus returning on the clouds, that it means Jesus will have to return. He must return before humanity spreads out into the galaxy.
Oh, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful observation. And you and I have talked about this before. I personally do not think we've ever been to the moon. I know many of you disagree with me, and I respect you for it. But I just find it impossible to believe that we got there on a computer that wasn't a whole lot better than what is in our phones now.
What was not even as good. It didn't have the computational power of a Commodore 64.
We made it in a spacecraft that was essentially covered with aluminum foil and made it through the Van Allen belt, which is a radiation belt that'll fry just about anything. So I just find it so hard to believe we actually went there.
There are some skeptics out there, and I've been remiss. I should do a show on that and get somebody on to talk about that. There's a fellow who's done a documentary on it, and he went and I guess got punched in the nose by one of the
former astronauts,
who was very upset at the question. It's interesting to think about. But I'd never considered this, and he did this in the context of discussing the proposed Mars mission, which is tentatively targeted for about 2030.
Manned mission to Mars.
Exactly. So, I mean, assuming that they figured out a way to get through the Van Allen belt, and we actually would try to send men to Mars by 2030, we look at the world of Star Trek and humanity spreading out throughout the galaxy in the 22nd, 23rd centuries. Jesus is going to have to return before then so that all people, tribes, nations on Earth will see him return.
Earlier than that, the Botany Bay with Khan aboard supposedly left our orbit in 1999.
Ha. Huh. Well, I guess we missed that target date.
Yeah, well, unless we've been conned.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, there are some out there like, Adam Curry, who believe that we already have a base on the far side of the moon.
I know that some of our listeners believe that, too. That's the great thing. We are each one allowed to believe as we choose to believe. But I'm right.
Well, what has been going on since we've been away? Much. Senate Bill 1867 passed. That is the Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2012.
Yeah, but it doesn't go into law until...
Right. It's got to be reconciled with the House bill,
exactly,
which is House Resolution 1540. So H.R. 1540 is still being considered by the House. Has not yet been signed by President Obama.
And there's been a sneaky clause in there.
Well, a couple of them, actually. There are a couple. And one has been raised by... those who are keeping a close eye on it, you know, Alex Jones, and there are a number of others around the alternative media on the internet who pointed out that one of the sections of Senate Bill 1867 allows the United States military to detain American citizens suspected of terrorist activity on American soil indefinitely and without trial. There are others out there in the media saying, oh, this is just a hoax. It's a false alarm. It's because there are other sections that say this requirement to detain a person in military custody under this section does not apply to citizens of the United States. Section 1032 of Senate Bill 1867. Mm-hmm. You know, the way I read this bill, and I am not by any means an expert, but
Neither is anyone in Congress.
Well, apparently
sorry
not.
To interrupt,
and we'll talk about Senator Lindsey Graham apparently made that clear, and we'll explain why in just a minute. But it seems to me that this is a means. And by the way, the Senate passed this bill by a vote of 93-7. But it's a sad comment on the state of American journalism when Jon Stewart of Comedy Central of The Daily Show actually makes a bigger deal of this than any of the mainstream news outlets. He did about a 10-minute piece on this bill in just astonishment that this bill would allow the government to lock up American citizens on American soil using the U.S. military, which essentially guts the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, which protects us against unlawful search and seizure, and also revokes the Posse Comitatus Act of 1867, which prevents the use of military for police duty on American soil.
Mm-hmm.
It basically nullifies a writ of habeas corpus.
I think you could even make the argument that the Second Amendment that allows us to carry guns?
Right, yeah.
Well, I think you could even by... associations say that puts that into doubt. I mean, if you're carrying a gun, will you be mistaken for someone, you know, who's plotting or demonstrating in violent means against the United States?
Well, that's possible. What's interesting, though, is we happen now to live in the only state in the Union, Illinois, that does not allow for concealed carry of firearms.
Well,
they're trying to get it passed here, but Illinois is the only state in the Union now that does not allow for legal concealed carry.
And that's
firearm.
Why we have a dachshund.
That's right, because you can conceal a dachshund. And there's no law against that. Look out, he's got a dachshund! if you've never seen a dachshund snarl.
Oh, man.
Yeah, nose goes up like the nose of a great white shark. The teeth get longer. I don't know how he does that. It's weird. So there's that. So there's the section in this bill, Senate 1867, again, which is passed. It's now House Resolution 1540 to keep an eye on that that supposedly allows for the federal government to lock up American citizens using the military, American citizens on American soil, and lock us up indefinitely. Apparently, my sense is that this is to legitimize what the federal government has already done with people like the gentleman who was accused of leaking the WikiLeaks documents or leaking the information to WikiLeaks.
Oh,
not Julian Assange. He's the guy with WikiLeaks. It's PFC Bradley Manning.
Yes, thank you.
And also...
And no one's seen Manning since he was arrested.
Right.
He was moved to Kansas, I think, and that's it. That's all we know.
He's being held in solitary confinement, but has not yet been, as far as I know, has not yet been charged. There was also the case of the gentleman from Chicago who was being held... without charge, and his case was being kicked up to the Supreme Court when the government then did bring charges against him to avoid the Supreme Court ruling on whether the government could hold him indefinitely. But this government asserts the right for the executive branch to determine who constitutes a threat and to then arrest and detain that person as an enemy combatant indefinitely without charge, which again is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
American citizens are entitled to Fourth Amendment protections, which means you can only be arrested if charges are brought. If you are arrested, you have the right to demand a writ of habeas corpus.
So which that, is now gone.
Right. Habeas corpus means that the government would then have to convince a judge that they had reason to arrest mm-hmm. you. You know, habeas corpus means body produce of, the body. Yeah. That is out the window.
As in body of evidence, not just the body alone. But I mean,
yes. Yeah. You know, demonstrate some cause for this person being arrested. So again, I believe that that's why this was included in the defense authorization bill. And no one's going to vote. Let me step back again. Most senators and representatives don't have the cojones to vote against the Defense Authorization Act because it's a political football. Mm-hmm. You're denying the funds that our troops need in order to fight the.
I have a question. When this was voted on in the Senate, was that a voice vote or was that a roll call?
I don't know because they did note that it was passed 93-7.
Okay, it was probably a roll call then.
Right.
Sometimes you know they weasel out of this by. It's not on the record as to how you voted.
Yeah.
But if they know the exact numbers, then it had to have been a roll call vote.
Yeah, and I'm looking to see who now, if we can find out who actually voted on this bill.
Well, we'll find it. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. So if you want to see how your senators voted on this,
yeah.
more than likely they
I
voted
just found
for it.
It. The seven who voted against it were Senator Harkin, Democrat of Iowa, Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky.
That's no surprise.
No. Kind of expected that. Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Nebraska or Oklahoma. Both senators from Oregon, Senator Wyden and Merkley, both Democrats. And Senator Mike Lee of Utah, Republican. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent socialist of Vermont. Were the seven who voted against it. So both of our Illinois senators, one Republican, one Democrat, voted in favor, that Senator Kirk and Senator Durbin.
And that's no surprise either.
Yeah. So you would think that a bill with that provision included that would allow for the indefinite detention of American citizens without charge would have raised a bit of a fuss. But because it can be spun in the public eye as a vote against American troops— most politicians don't have the guts to vote against it.
Now, speaking
there was
of
another
American,
provision.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you getting into the other one regarding American troops?
There was another provision in the Defense Authorization Act, and this was a provision, Article 125 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice is repealed in the version of the bill passed by the Senate. Now, Article 125 of the Uniform Military Code
reads as follows.
Article 125 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice says, A, any person subject to this chapter who engages in unnatural carnal copulation with another person of the same or opposite sex or with an animal is guilty of sodomy. B, any person found guilty of sodomy shall be punished as a court-martial may direct. End quote. This is repealed. Section 125, Article 125 is repealed under Senate Bill 1867, which means that members of the United States
military,
it's all go. I mean, what's interesting is that the initial version of the bill, the Defense Authorization Act for 2012, that passed the Republican-controlled House, did not include this provision to repeal Article 125. The version that passed through the Democrat-controlled Senate includes this provision to repeal. And
Do we know who inserted it?
Who
made the change? No, somebody sponsored that change.
No, I know, and I don't know who did, actually. And the reason we mentioned Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina earlier is that CNS News, which is the... CNS News, which is a conservative news outlet online,
right.
asked him, and he was not aware that the defense bill that he just championed lifts the military ban on sodomy and bestiality. So, American soldiers, you may have to go
Gee,
through
Lindsay,
multiple
deployments. You're a lawyer. Can't you read, hon?
Yeah. American soldiers, we... No, I shouldn't be flippant about it because, I think it's.
You know what?
they wanted to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I suppose because the military has said that, okay, we can allow gays in the military, I suppose they needed to repeal Article 120 or at least amend Article 125.
Mm-hmm.
But they just struck the whole section.
Yeah.
They could have amended it to, you know, say, okay, if you want to, you know, engage in sex.
Look, if you really think your horse is beautiful and you want to hang out with him, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well,
they're now backpedaling and saying, well, we probably wouldn't like that because that would be cruelty to animals.
Yeah. A spokesman for the Pentagon said that they would still court-martial anyone caught engaging in.
Well, good luck on them, because if this bill passes as is, mm-hmm. if it's not changed in this resolution process with the House, they're going to, you know, just say that. The lawyer is going to say, I'm sorry, but it's right here. Repealed the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, the Pentagon spokesman said they would consider it animal cruelty, which is still a court. It
doesn't matter. They're going to have to change it, yeah. because if that's the way the law reads.
Well, yeah. So anyway, Senator Lindsey Graham said
they don't want PETA coming after.
Didn't know it was in there. So, you know, American citizens, sorry, we can arrest you and hold you indefinitely. But the good news is you can now do whatever you want to with goats. So
you can stare at them. You can take them to dinner.
The men who stare at goats gives it a whole new definition. Yeah. Well, economically, the Europeans are still freaking out over their debt issues. And in the sense, the context, I guess, of not letting a good crisis go to waste, they're trying to push a European stabilization mechanism, or ESM, on the member states of the Eurozone. David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the UK, said, we're not going to be party to this. They're opting out. Now, of course, mm-hmm. the UK doesn't use the euro. They're not one of the 17 Eurozone states because they have not given up the British pound as their national currency. So
right.
there's less leverage on them than, say, over Greece, Spain, and the other 17 nations within the Eurozone. I mean, who've given up their currency in favor of the euro. This is, in my view, a blatant attempt by the elites within the Eurozone to use the leverage of the financial crisis mm-hmm. to
go shopping?
Yeah, essentially, and buy up the assets of the member states to essentially mm-hmm. Force those nation states to give up national sovereignty to the financial union. This is how they are going to impose a political union and enforce a political union over mm-hmm. these states. In fact, we've already seen it begun, and we've not talked about this because we really haven't done a show since this began to take place. But we saw the national governments of two sovereign nations change. We've seen regime change take place in two European nations without a shot being mm-hmm, fired mm-hmm. and without an election taking place on the part of the people who will now live underneath these governments. The government of Greece has been changed without the consent of the Greek people. Lucas Papandreou is the new prime minister of Greece.
Trilateral commission.
Yeah, interestingly, yes. He's been a member
Bilderberg.
Of the Trilateral commission. He's not the Bilderberger. That's
the
Italian guy. But he was, in fact, a member of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. No surprise there. And then served on the European Central Bank for the last 8 years. He was put into place without a vote of the Greek people. Mario Monti is the fellow who is the new prime minister of Europe in the wake of the resignation of Silvio Bunga Bunga Berlusconi. And he is a member of the Trilateral Commission also. He's on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group and an international advisor to Goldman Sachs. The bankers have taken over the Eurozone. Interestingly, what may be happening and the reason that Prime Minister David Cameron rejected Britain's participation in this European stability mechanism. This may be an attempt by the Germans and the French to take over the city of London. In other words, the big London banks, including the Rothschilds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say the Germans, especially because the mm-hmm. French are also in trouble.
Yes, there are some rumors floating about
two major banks downgraded by Standard and Poor's
and Moody's
and Moody's. Yeah.
Yep. And there are rumors that the French banks may be teetering on the verge of collapse. Interestingly, Herman de Rompuy, who is the president of the EU, I finally remembered the word I was trying to remember, talking about the high debt of some of the nation states in the EU, regionalization of the debt.
We?
regionalization of the debt.
He said regionalization, yeah, as in they're all using wheeze. And it may be actually pretty close to the truth.
Well, or more like weaselization of the debt.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
But regionalization of the debt, which essentially means, look, we are our brother's keeper. We will all shoulder this burden. But of course, that means you have to make some concessions to the financial austerity measures we need to impose in order to clean up this financial mess.
We'd love to allow you guys to continue buying and selling, but if you want to do that, you're going to have to play ball.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we are so close to that world government. Well, a couple of days ago, you and I were talking about the Roman, at least I said to you, this whole thing with Syria, mm-hmm, and Egypt and Libya, all of that. Is it possible that we're actually looking at the revived Roman Empire as it really existed at the time of Christ, or shortly before that? Yeah. Julius Caesar and the what do they call it? It was the four generals who were in charge of it, or maybe it's three. Pompey, Caesar, and there was a third. And
triumvirate.
The triumvirate. Thank you very much. But it included Egypt and Syria and Lebanon and Israel. And it included a lot of the areas that we're looking at now that are involved in the Arab Spring, the uprisings. And it just makes me wonder. And I think it even went over into Iraq.
Well, the extent of the Roman Empire at the time of the death of
Caesar Augustus,
and after Julius Caesar, extended essentially from Iran, included all of Egypt and northern Africa, and then all of what is modern Europe, including Turkey
and parts of Great Britain.
Yeah, well, yes, the southern part of Great Britain. They never could.
Included London.
Yeah, exactly. They never could take down the Scots or the Irish.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the Celts were a little too tough for them.
You better believe it.
But yes, it basically was all of Europe west of the Danube. Everything in Asia Minor, Armenia, part of Iraq, of course, the Fertile Crescent of Iraq, Syria, Palestine, Israel, Egypt, yes.
If we're looking for a revived Roman Empire during the seven-year tribulation period, the final week of Daniel's 70-week prophecy, is it possible that we're looking for something more than just Europe? I know many of us have been looking at Europe, but how about that whole empire?
Well, Turkey's wanted to become part of the EU for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So the Turks certainly would like to be integrated into that economic union.
And it's really, it's tempting to look at this simplistically and say, well, wait a minute, though. No, those Northern African nations, they're really kind of run by the Muslim Brotherhood now. And and Saudi Arabia essentially controls a lot of the Middle East. And then we get into Iraq, which is, you could say, we're sort of influential there. Afghanistan, who knows? Iran, well, that's just, out the door. But if you take a look at the banking and you take a look at the businesses that work and essentially influence and in many ways run these countries, or at least they have put the titular head into place, the person who is sort of the puppet to their puppet mastery, is it possible that we're really looking at the revived Roman Empire?
Well, that's a really good question.
Except for Israel.
Yeah, which will have to flee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think one of the factors to consider is, what is really going on in the nations, with the so-called Arab Spring. Here in the United States, our government was all in favor of encouraging the revolutions in Libya and Egypt and Tunisia. But what we're seeing in Egypt is that In the recent parliamentary elections there, 2/3 of the seats were won by hardline Islamists. 40% went to the Muslim Brotherhood, and another 23% or thereabouts, I don't know the exact figure, went to the Salafist party. The Salafists are essentially Wahhabists. I mean, they're farther to the, they're more hardline Islamic than Islamist than the Muslim Brotherhood. So you got 2/3 of the seats in their parliament now controlled by Islamists. The Muslim Brotherhood, as we've talked about before is essentially the outgrowth of the influence of Hitler's Nazi Germany in the region. The Muslim Brotherhood is the parent organization of some of the terrorist organizations that have plagued the region over the last 50 years. Fatah, Hamas, Al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it could be argued that Hitler was trying to do that very thing because he was in North Africa.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And
so was Napoleon.
And the SS was very active in Palestine during World War II and Egypt thereafter. And MI6 and the CIA encouraged, it basically transplanted the movement from Egypt into Saudi Arabia during the rise of Nasser in Egypt, who was a very secular ruler. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's not a coincidence that some of these hardline Islamist groups in the Middle East use the Nazi salute. There is no historical precedent for the Nazi salute in Islam or in Arab culture until the 1930s, 1940s, when Hitler sent the SS in there to stir up, to enlist the Arabs as allies in his drive to eliminate the Jews. So we encouraged the Arab Spring, the uprising in Egypt, and suddenly now the Muslim Brotherhood and allied groups have now taken control of their parliament. There have been news stories this past week about how the United States is now financing the military crackdown on the street demonstrations in Cairo. We're seeing hardline groups allied with Al-Qaeda rising to power in Libya. What exactly are we trying to do there? Either A, the people in the U.S. Department of State and the Obama administration are too stupid to understand what they've done, or what they told us they wanted to do is not really what they wanted to do.
Gasp.
Yeah. And I'll say again, I find it harder to believe that people rise to that level of power in our government by being stupid than to believe that they just lied to us. And they wanted this Islamist uprising in Africa and Palestine for some unknown reason. But what is the end game? Well, perhaps it's, you know, and this is why we do this show. We try to discern and try to figure out what is the game being played by the powers and principalities behind the scenes, those entities that we can't see with human eyes.
Which is why it's called PID Radio. Yes. That stands for Peering into Darkness. If you're new to the show, then that's exactly what it is. Well, you talked with Carl Tykrieb today, and I know that he has been taking a look at what's going on in Russia. Mm-hmm. And the almost Russian Spring that appears to be taking place now. Mm-hmm. What did he have to say about that?
Well, get to that in just a moment, but he also raised another interesting point about what's taking place over there. Carl Tykrieb is the chief editor of Forcing Change, which is a newsletter you can subscribe to at the website forcingchange.org. His latest edition had an article about some interfaith activities that took place in October that were significant, because not only are we moving toward a global political union, global governance or global management, he prefers to call it, because governance implies the consent of the governed, which is not really what the global elites want. They want to just manage us. Okay, so global management, political global management through the United Nations and global financial institutions, which, by the way, the Vatican recently put out a call for.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
Global political authority to ensure financial and economic justice around the world. Apparently, we need a one world government so that we can all be economically, you know, equal.
Well, along that line, Hillary Clinton just came out. And I know this is connected, so I'll let you get to yours in a minute. But it's this idea that every country has to be uniform. She and Bill Clinton are both now saying that every country needs to be fair to gays.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're not, then that means that somehow, I think that they're going to use that as an excuse to come in and say, well, you shouldn't have the right to be a sovereign nation then. Because it is on the record that if you don't come up to the values expressed by the majority of the rulers of the world, mm-hmm. that they get to come in and say, well, I'm sorry, but you failed our nation test.
Yeah.
And so you're no longer sovereign.
Yeah, so the Obama administration, through Hillary Clinton, has made it clear that a priority, a foreign policy mm-hmm. priority of this administration is rights for gays, equal rights for gays. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's going to play real well in the Middle East. I mean, you know, it's
yes, I know.
Absurd. With everything else that's going on in the world, the United States to come forth and make a policy statement that that human rights for gays is a priority is ridiculous. Now, having said that, we want to be clear that we don't advocate persecution.
Absolutely.
We do not. Absolutely do not.
You show love and respect to everybody.
That's right.
Because God gave us all, each one of us, has free will.
Mm-hmm.
We get to choose to love him and serve him and obey his laws and accept Jesus Christ as our Savior. Or we get to choose to do otherwise. And that is our choice.
Yeah. And the Bible makes it clear that all of us have chosen to disobey, that
exactly.
There is none righteous, no, not
exactly.
One.
Exactly. So, I know of only one unforgivable sin, and it is not being gay.
That's right. It's a blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. So
we love you. If you've chosen a gay lifestyle, we love you.
Yeah. And so we're not, you know,
we want you to know Christ. We really do. And we believe that when you accept Christ as your Savior, that you will begin to wonder about your lifestyle choice.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we love you just as you are, because Jesus took me just as I was when I made that choice mm-hmm. to accept him as Savior. He chose you just as you were at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he has since worked in our lives to bring us up to his expectations. But, oh, Lord, if we don't care what you're doing.
Yeah.
What choices you're making. Jesus loves you. We love you.
Yeah. It's just seems that in the grand scheme of things, with all of the unrest, all of the potential flashpoints in the world out there, that making a major policy statement about whom people choose to have sex with seems to be a rather low foreign policy objective and priority.
And that's why I was so surprised.
Stunned.
Yeah,
stunned.
So was I. Well, anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Back in October, an agreement was signed by the Saudi foreign minister, Prince Saud Al-Faisal, the Spanish foreign minister, Trinidad Jimenez, and the vice chancellor of Austria, Michael Spindelegger. And the purpose was to create and house a new international organization in Vienna dedicated to uniting the world's religions around cultural understanding. This new organization will be financed with Saudi money. It's the brainchild of King Abdullah and Prince Saud Al-Faisal. And the group that attended the signing ceremony included two representatives of the Vatican's Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue. The interesting thing about this interfaith initiative is that, one, it's being financed by the House of Saud, which is Wahhabist, which is one of the principal financiers and has been for decades of the religious schools, madrasas in Saudi Arabia that have produced much of the radical strain of Islam that's caused so much destruction around the world in recent years. But that the Vatican would be a party to this, which again, reflecting back on their declaration in October that we need a world political authority, would indicate that the Vatican and other organizations around the world are looking toward a unity through economics, politics, and religion. Basically the three-legged stool that comprises essentially everything that every aspect of human life. Now, just on the interest of looking deeper into this, the agreement was signed on 10/13 of 2011. 10/13, of course, is a significant date. That was the date that the Templars were essentially purged from Europe by King Philip the Fair in, 1307?
Philip the Unfair.
Yeah. And that it's being housed in, Austria, a nation that gave us the guy whose radical strain of national socialism led to Wahhabist Islam, Adolf Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's bizarre that we're
living in such an odd world. It's the craziest mixed up. Well, it's crazy.
And because it's taking place at a time of year when most of us are distracted by You know, we need to shop. We've got plays at school.
There's
we've got
Black Cantata Friday, Church. Cyber we've Monday.
Got, you know, all these other things going on that are distracting us. We've got the football season going on. You know, other things that are basically taking our attention away from what's happening. These things are happening left and right. I mean, again, we've seen regime change in two rather large European nations, technocracies, openly touted as technocracies. As if this is a good thing. When you look back at the principles that guided Adolf Hitler and the National Socialist Party in Germany, the principles that guided Lenin and Trotsky and then later Stalin in Russia, it was this idea of technocracy. We figured out a better technologically advanced way of governance rather than this messy old form of a representative Republican government where people actually get a say in what they, we need techno experts telling you how you should live for the good of the state. And this has been imposed on the citizens of Italy and Greece. And most of us are like,
jobs for techno experts.
I suppose so.
And it will be claimed to be so.
Yeah. And now
we created 10,000 new jobs.
And to that end, we've got, sort of a pushback taking place in Russia where, the Russian state was being kind of pushed toward this global governance. Vladimir Putin has sort of versed that course here within the last decade or so, and his party didn't do as well in the recent election as they had thought. The last time they held elections there, Putin's party
barely hung on.
Forgive me for forgetting the name of the party, but the last time they did the election in 2008, I think they received about 2/3 of the vote. This is the one where Putin had to step down from the presidency to prime minister because he'd served two consecutive terms. He can go back and run again, which he's going to do in the next election. And Medvedev will step aside. But they won just about 50% of the vote. But they won 50% of the vote in an election that's been hotly contested. Many charges of vote fraud, people being denied access to polls and that sort of thing. And Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the last premier of the old Soviet Union, has spoken up and said that the only way to establish legitimacy for the election in Russia is to do it over. Now, we saw this script play out in Ukraine some years ago when the candidate favored by the West did not win the first go-round.
Yushchenko or Tymoshenko.
Tymoshenko was the one who came in later, but there were two candidates.
Yushchenko is the one who had the poison, and his face got all pockmarked. Isn't that Yushchenko?
I don't remember. I believe it was Yushchenko. Yanukovych was the other guy. Yanukovych was the incumbent. Yushchenko was the candidate favored by the West, and this was the Orange Revolution, where they had all of these spontaneous protests in the streets that appeared to be rather well organized and rather well financed. Well, as it turned out, that the United States government, Department of State, through the Open Society Initiative,
George Soros,
and other NGOs financed by the American taxpayer, like the National Endowment for Democracy, the International Republican Institute, USAID, were financing these supposed, allegedly grassroots protests in Ukraine, forced a second election at which the Western candidate Yushchenko was elected. We're seeing a similar script playing out in Russia right now, and I just have to wonder how much influence American tax money is having on what's taking place over there right now.
Well, and oligarch money as well.
Right. Because they're no fans of Putin's policies. Mm-hmm. Putin has basically nationalized a lot of the industry in Russia, specifically the energy sector, because Russia's got a lot of oil and natural gas.
Who's the expat oligarch who lives in London?
Khodorkovsky, yeah.
Who is connected to the Alexander Litvinenko
death. Spy, right.
Yes.
Who died.
He'd been sort of the protege of Khodorkovsky.
Yeah, and he was the guy who was poisoned with the radioactive isotope. Yeah, polonium-110. So go back, what was it, about 2006, 2008?
2005, 2006, somewhere in there.
Some, yeah,
Well, you could probably find it at PRDRadio.com right. because I know that we have talked about it in right. a number of times.
And we, in fact, even titled one of our episodes Pelosium 110 for, you know, as sort of a play on that word when Nancy Pelosi was named the first female speaker of the U.S. House. But
you know, another thing playing, and I don't know if Carl mentioned this, but Nashi is a huge influence with regard to Putin. They worship that man. Nashi is the youth party. They're mm-hmm. very similar to the Nazi youth party of
right.
Hitler's
youth.
Day.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that is something to keep an eye on, what's happening in Russia. And again, I would be frankly surprised if the United States, through USAID, the NED, and the IRI, are not trying to exercise some sort of influence there, just because it's what we do.
And this is what we do. How long have we been going? I don't have it.
Well, we've been going about 50 minutes. It seems
okay.
like only
well,
half an hour.
I got to tell you, before we close today, I would like to take a break from politics.
Okay.
And I want to talk about a book that you and I just recently read. And
oh,
I got to
yeah,
tell
yeah,
you,
yeah.
if you want something cool to read over Christmas and you want a rah-rah, almost stand up while you're reading it sort of book, Brian Gadawa has written a book called Noah Primeval that is the best mm-hmm. look at the pre-flood war. Actually, it was a war
yes.
that he writes in there. It's the Lord of the Rings meets
Noah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way of describing it. I interviewed Brian for View from the Bunker a few weeks back, and he was kind enough to share a Kindle version mm-hmm. of the book. That's the ebook format,
which was what I read
Amazon.
As well.
Com.
So we don't have a hard copy
right.
to actually show you, because we were going to do a video review of this book. And I said, we can show the book. And Derek said, how?
Yeah.
What, are you going to hold up your, you know, computer and say, look at the ebook I read?
But it's well worth reading. It's Brian Gadawa is a scriptwriter by trade, and he has written the scripts for a couple of movies that are fairly well known. One was called To End All Wars, which featured Kiefer Sutherland and Robert Carlyle, which was an award-winning film. He also did the script for an adaptation of the Frank Peretti novel, The Visitation.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some others. He's also did a short film that was really creepy, and I can't remember the title of it now, but essentially it's about a psychopath who kidnaps professors who are arguing that that there is no external source of right and wrong. That so in other words, if there is no God, then why should I not just torture you to death? Because it's wrong. Why?
Who says?
Well, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, basically the idea of the film being that ideas have consequences. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, just a very thought-provoking. You can see it at his website, Gadawa.com. That's Gadawa.com. But Noah Primeval
oh,
is
it's
awesome.
Wonderful.
The book has the feel of a film script
mm-hmm.
and
you
the
can
feel
really
of
can
a movie.
Picture
right.
it as you're reading it.
Yeah.
And if you go to his website, and we'll link to that, it's simply Gadawa.com, Gadawa.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll link to it in the show notes. You will see what an extraordinary artist he is.
Yeah. Now, so he did admit that some of the actual characters that he portrays in the novel are on the artwork that he's done are actually, you know, stock photo type things. But he is a designer of some skill, because he did all the design work for those covers. And just as sort of a proof of concept sort of thing, he's also got a concepts there for a video game, for
comic book, graphic novel.
And it would be very, very cool in either of those formats. So, highly recommended Noah Primeval. Like you said, there are scenes there when you're reading, you can just picture it in your mind as, okay, this is where the theater stands and cheers.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you got to read that.
And the Lord of the Rings connection, you're absolutely right, because mm-hmm. he brings in characters in the Bible that we don't know much about. The Bible doesn't tell us a lot about, for example, Methuselah or Tubal-Cain or Jubal and you know, so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Mm-hmm.
But just if you picture Methuselah and Tubal-Cain as Legolas and Gimli, as that sort of relationship, mm-hmm. and you get an idea of how Brian approached the characters in the novel. It's great.
Wonderful. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Highly recommended.
So anyway, yeah.
So, a couple of other things. the situation in Iran gets much more interesting with the downing of that American drone.
They're not giving it up either.
No. This drone that was knocked down is not one of the drones that we've been seeing on TV, like the Predator or the Reaper, which are, you know, kind of funny looking propellers on both ends. So they knocked down an RQ-170 drone, which looks like the stealth fighter or stealth bomber. It is a stealth drone. It has that same look. And it was not something.
How they knocked down something that's stealth?
That is the question.
Well,
and the implications of this are disturbing, because until the U.S. military and the Israeli military figure out how they took down a stealth drone, we apparently don't dare risk an assault on Iran's nuclear facilities.
Well, there are some that say that there's already been something that's taken place.
That's the other thing, because there are satellite images, this reported by Fox News going back just a few days now, that there was something that took place at the Iranian nuclear facility near
Isfahan.
Yeah, Isfahan, back on November 28th. And satellite photos indicate...
Fish for sale?
Yes.
Susan?
Yeah. This is Iran's uranium conversion facility, where yellow cake is converted into uranium hexafluoride mm-hmm. gas, and then into enriched uranium, which can then be used for nuclear fuel, for a power plant or for weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And... something happened at this site, and this was...
I think you and I actually talked about that, because it was there were like five or six different versions of the story throughout the day, beginning mm-hmm. with denial.
Yeah, nothing happened here, but other reports were that
okay,
quite
house
a
blew
few
up.
People...
Yeah. No, actually, it was a military exercise. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it was... So something did happen there.
Right.
The satellite photos show that something happened.
Right. Israeli sources say something happened at the site. Iran still denies that anything happened, but satellite photos indicate something took place there. Who's responsible and what exactly happened, we don't know.
Well, let's just remember that stealth drones and our drones in general, drones can be armed.
They can. Now, this RQ-170 supposedly is unarmed. But U.S. and Israeli air forces now need to consider their moves very carefully before any action against Iran, if any, is taken, because they don't know how the Iranians were able to take down this drone. The question is, did the Pakistanis have something to do with this? The Pakistanis, according to Debka, Debka.com, still very upset at U.S. Intervention on their soil, going back to the assassination of Osama bin Laden.
Right. I also saw a story online that I'm sorry, since I've not been online for several days, can't tell you what the story was, but it was a news article speculating that it was some sort of cyber warfare initiated by Iran that actually took it down.
Hmm. So, interesting things taking place over on that side of the ocean. There was a story that came...
Are we at 60 yet? Because we're
getting pretty close here. But I do want to mention this just because of an odd note that came out in the trial out of Denver. This was reported by the local CBS affiliate there. The sentencing of a serial rapist named Mark O'Leary, who pleaded guilty in October to raping women in communities in the Denver area. Pled guilty to 28 of 39 charges. He's been sentenced to over 300 years for the rapes. The young man is 33 years old. But here's the bizarre thing that came
39
out.
39 charges and he's 33.
Yeah, but here's the bizarre thing that came out. If I can find the paragraph here. Here we go. After O'Leary was arrested, Snohomish County affidavit describes interviews with people who know him. According to the interviews, O'Leary appears to have a sense of entitlement to have sex with whomever he pleases. They told police he was part of a secret society that believed, quote, the world is divided into alphas and bravos, end quote. O'Leary believed he was an alpha that entitled him to have sexual intercourse with whomever he wanted.
Wow.
Secret society divides the worlds into alphas and bravos.
Well, we're going to have to look
do
into
some
that
research
and,
in this.
And come back with that next show. Sam just signaled that we're done.
Yeah. So anyway.
Besides, the Bears are still playing.
Yeah, that's right. Got to go see how Tim Tebow is doing to the Bears
afternoon.
VFTB.net interview with Carl Tykrib of Forcing Change. The latest article or the latest edition of Forcing Change titled Riding the Wave of World Change. And it's kind of an interesting look at some of the recent developments as globalists attempt to push us toward one world government and one world religion. So you'll find that at vftb.net. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear, a better day is coming soon.